Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Wednesday, June the 22nd, 2022. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio at blogtalkradio.com, where we bring you a show each day, anywhere from an hour to 2 hours. Good stuff. Every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Tuesdays, it's Eric with the Cross and the Crescent discussion. That's at 6 p.m. Eastern also. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, at 5:30 Eastern time. Thursdays at 6 Eastern, it is Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. And then Fridays, usually around noon, Andrew Herod is in with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Revealing the Truth About Islam, accompanied by the beautiful Christie. It's led by, of course, Minister Usama Dakduk. And then Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern, Eric is back with sort of a continuation of the Cross and the Crescent discussion, also called Real Interfaith Dialogue. So 7 shows a week, 1 a day, multiple hosts, some hosts doing multiple duties. That's here at blogtalkradio.com. Look for Global Patriot Radio when you come in here. It'll give you a listing of our shows, which days. You can check the show runners. It tells you what's going on. Another way to stay in contact with us, of course, is to call in at 319-527-6706. You do that, you can listen in. If you want to talk, you can hit the 1 and hey, then we know that you want to talk. There's other shows on Blog Talk Radio as well. Tim Tapp with Tap Into the Truth. Fridays, Airwaves America with Dave and Jeske with the Dave and Jeske Rock Show. Joseph Gibson's in several times a week with Understanding the Times in Which We Live. Annie with Southern Sense Radio. So check in. Check in. When you come to a show, by the way, you can look at the top of the chat if you're online, and you can hit follow, and it'll give you emails of all the, you know, that's if you have an account, it'll give you an email with all the stuff. You'll get emails before the shows go live, usually an hour to 2 hours beforehand. So I'm hanging out here in Electric Hank Land. My wife is in the other room, I think watching TV. She had a different kind of day today, not her typical day. Had to go into her office, even though they've been remote for a couple of years now. And of course, our little Aussie, our little miniature Australian Shepherd, is out and about. She's probably hanging in the air conditioning right now. It's really hot here today. So, hey, we got some obituaries this week, as we usually do. Last Thursday, we lost actor Tyler Sanders. He died suddenly, it said, of unknown causes at the age of 18. That's way too young. His credits include Just Add Magic, Mystery City. He did a couple stints on Fear the Walking Dead, and he also was on a show I really like called 911 Lone Star. And then Friday, we lost former WWF/WWE and TNA Impact pro wrestling referee Dave Hebner at age 73 to complications of Parkinson's. His most famous storyline, if you'll remember, if you followed wrestling, is when he was locked in a closet by the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, for a title match on one of those Friday main events. It was normally on Saturday, but this was a Friday edition. A match between Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan. In that match, Dave Hebner's real-life corrupt twin brother, Earl, counted out Hogan, even though Hulk's shoulders were off the mat. The big storyline, and then Dave then came out to the ring after the match, which set up the evil twin storyline. Earl also recently retired from the ring, but both of them were actually released from WWE over the selling of WWE promotional materials and memorabilia without permission. No word on whether they have confirmed 100% that it was indeed Dave who died and not Earl. I guess tune in for the next several months to find out, see if they make that a storyline, I guess. I know it's poor taste, but they're the ones that ran with the evil twin story in the first place. So Saturday, we lost former PBS political commentator Mark Shields to kidney failure. He was 85. He worked on NewsHour from 1988 to 2020. He was also on CNN's Capital Gang for quite a while. Served as a political advisor. Not surprisingly, he worked on Democrat campaigns, including those of Robert F. Kennedy and Sergeant Shriver. Sunday, we lost another former WWE referee, Tim White. He was 68. No cause was listed. He also served as an assistant for Andre the Giant, who I mentioned earlier, as well as providing security and assistant type stuff for other numerous other wrestlers. He was noted. He did a series on WWE's website called Lunchtime Suicide, where he would be featured attempting a different method of suicide each week while being interviewed by WWE reporter Josh Matthews. It finally concluded with White inviting Matthews to his bar, where he then shot Josh Matthews. I remember that. That was sort of semi-controversial. I wasn't following wrestling at all at that point. I follow it in the news. I just don't watch the live, the stuff on TV. It's gotten out of stupid. Monday, really sad. Former Purdue Boilermaker power forward Caleb Swanigan passed away in a Fort Wayne, Indiana hospital. He was just 25. No further details have been released yet. He was Indiana High School's Mr. Basketball for 2015. He initially committed to Michigan State and then decided to stay in-state and attend Purdue. In the 2015-16 season, he was the first major college player to record 600 points, 400 rebounds, and 100 assists in a season. Pretty remarkable, really. His sophomore year was even better. He made first team All-Big Ten, Player of the Year by both media and coaches. He made five All-America teams, also an academic All-American. He was drafted 26th in the first round overall by the Portland Trail Blazers in 2017. He was there about a season and a half, got traded to the Sacramento Kings. He was traded back to Portland in January of 2020, right before COVID. And then he opted out when they went to that summer bubble thing in summer of 2020, the NBA bubble. They entered the COVID protocols. He opted out. He never returned to the league after that season. Very sad loss. I'm sure we'll hear more later. Yesterday we lost actor, playwright, director, composer James Rado, or Rado. He was 90 from cardiorespiratory arrest. Well, the name may not be prominent in your mind. He co-wrote the musical Hair, for which he and his co-author Jerome Ragney won Tony and Emmy Awards, respectively, for Best Musical. Late last night, we lost the Baltimore Ravens outside linebacker and defensive end Jalen Ferguson, just 26. No details have been available other than the Baltimore Police Department saying it's questionable and, quote, we aren't ruling anything out. There were no visible signs of foul play or trauma. He played college ball, Louisiana Tech. He was drafted by the Ravens in the third round of the 2019 draft. He was actually disinvited from the combine. He had a misdemeanor arrest for simple battery, and he was disinvited from the combine, or uninvited, I guess you'd say, which I think, it was before he was even at Louisiana Tech. So I don't know. He had 45 sacks at Louisiana Tech. That's still an NCAA record, career sacks record, which, of course, gave him the name Sack Daddy, his nickname. According to sources, he had participated in all of their offseason practices. God, what terrible news. I mean, I know there are athlete deaths every year in the off season, but it just sucks. I mean, bright future, great career ahead of him, leaves a fiance, a son, two daughters. I mean, it's just sad. And then today we lost another former Raven and Colt defensive lineman, Tony Siragusa. He was just 55. He was also a Fox sideline analyst in recent years, and no other details have been released on that as yet either. Hey, before we get to news, don't forget my pals at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center, messaging and call center services, your medical clinic, your hospital clinic, your service company, your law office, your property management, real estate management. They do it all. They'll get the job done. They're also a good employer for if you like doing remote work. Give them a call, 800-555-3738, or visit their website, alliancecommunications.com. Good folks. Here's some quickies. You might want to pull up Fox News' Jesse Waters for his take on who is really in charge of La Dopey Nostra. It's very spot on, and worse for Dopey Joe. The public perception for is that Dopey Joe is taking the reins from Jimmy Carter on most inept and most failed presidency. Yeah, that's not good news. Because unlike Dopey Joe, Jimmy Carter is a fine person, and he's proven that. In spite of even, you know, the way he went after some Republicans afterward, he's still a fine human being, you know, Habitat Humanity, et cetera. Dopey Joe is not. So Dopey Joe is going to be an inept, failed president, and he's still a jackwagon. By the way, Elon Musk laid out the idea that labor unions, particularly the United Auto Workers, is what's running the DNC. You might be right on that. Polk County, Florida, Sheriff Grady Judd and his department, they ran another online child predator sting recently. And, of course, like clockwork, a Disney employee showed up on the list of those who was arrested. But worse, the guy was doing it while he was driving his Disney bus route. Sick bastard. In Michigan, judges and other political types are doing their level best to eliminate any and all Republican challengers to Governor Gretchen Whitmer. One county has banned the private funding of election administration from the right direction, I guess. But question becomes, who is going to eventually prevail, the lawful or the crooked? And a final quickie, Texas Republicans have passed a resolution that Dopey Joe was not legitimately elected and that substantial fraud in key metro areas influenced the results. Guys, you're a year and a half too late on that. Let's get to the news. A USA Today reporter has been exposed as a fraud. I know, that's not a shock at all. But what does come as a shock, a mild shock anyway, USA Today has removed 23 articles from their site. Almost all of them were anti-conservative, but here's American Briefing ran the story, one of the stories. I mean, I'm sure they took it from someone else. But basically, it said they deleted over 20 articles after reporter exposed as fraud. Reporter Gabriela Miranda was revealed to be fabricating sources after an external correction request led an internal audit team to uncover her carefully crafted lies. Newspaper said after receiving an external correction request, USA Today audited the reporting work of Gabriela Miranda. The audit revealed that some individuals quoted were not affiliated with the organizations claimed and appeared to be fabricated. The existence of other individuals quoted could not be independently verified. In addition, some stories included quotes that should have been credited to others. Also attempted to cover up her lies with more lies, producing, quote, false of her news gathering. Here are some of the articles that were banned. Texas abortion ban could lead to stockpiling contraceptives and pregnancy tests. Another one, anti-vaxxer pushes urine therapy as COVID antidote without scientific evidence. Here's one. Campus ministry at Virginia Tech had its pride flag stolen, replaced with a Confederate flag. Yeah, that's not going to happen at pretty much any university anymore. She resigned from the paper, deleted her social media accounts, et cetera. It's not their first scandal, by the way, USA Today. Remember 2004, Jack Kelly, a Pulitzer Prize finalist, had long revealed he'd long been plagiarizing work from other outlets, making up stories. So, yeah, I'm not sure if she's the one that claimed an interview source from somebody who had passed away 2 years before. Remember, I briefly touched on that last week. There was a reporter who claimed a source, and then that source was dead 2 years before they claimed the source. So here's another from American Briefing. Actress Patricia Heaton, who is known to be somewhat conservative, although she does support LGBT rights, or anti-discrimination, I should say. She went off on Disney for their recasting of Buzz Lightyear. rather than using the actor who originated the role, her former co-star, Tim Allen. No, that was Patricia. No, okay. That was a different Patricia. Patricia Heaton was on, I believe, Everybody Loves Raymond. Anyway, by the way, he's also steadfastly conservative, and if you'll remember, his show Last Man Standing needed Fox to find the show a home after ABC, also owned by Disney, had canceled it. Fox picked it up after outrage from fans. Anyway, here's some of what Heaton said, as well as the cover your ass and woke response from Lightyear actor Chris Evans, who has now got the role. Basically, I was right. Everybody loves Raymond. She basically said she saw the trailer for Buzz Lightyear, and all she can say is that Disney Pixar made a huge mistake in not casting Tim Allen in the role that he originated, the role that he owns. She said, Tim is Buzz. Why would they completely castrate this iconic, beloved character? She doubled down after fans pointed out that the Toy Story spinoff is the origin story of an action hero that the toy astronaut is based on, not the action figure that Allen brought to the big screen. Says, okay, so the current Buzz Lightyear movie is an origin story, but the reason the character became so beloved is because of what Tim Allen created. Why remove the one element that makes us want to see it? She also added the hashtag stupid Hollywood decisions. The new star, Chris Evans, addressed the other reason the film went viral. He said the same-sex kiss between the two female characters that spurned United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia to ban it. He says, the real truth is those people are idiots, he told Reuters. Every time there's been social advancement as we wake up, the American story, the human story, is one of constant social awakening and growth, and that's what makes us good. There's always going to be people who are afraid and unaware, trying to hold on to what was before, but those people die off like dinosaurs. The goal is to pay them no mind, march forward, and embrace the growth that makes us human. Look, I don't really care what happens behind closed doors, as I've said before. I have too many other things to worry about. Most of us do. But you know what? Doesn't mean that we have to see how woke people are on screen. You know, I mean, we just don't. It's just that. It's just idiotic. It's stupid. It's throwing it in the face, really. It's almost a way to say, see. Okay, I'm going to save this story till last before my guest comes on. In a case where appearance might be the real motive, the World Body for Swimming has ruled that transgender athletes may no longer swim in women's events. And I'll read briefly from ESPN's version of the story. Basically, it means that you-know-who, Willia Thomas, is not going to be able to show his unit in his swimsuit. Swimming's world governing body, FINA, on this past Sunday, voted to restrict the participation of transgender athletes in the elite women's competitions and create a working group to establish an open category for them in some events as part of its new policy. The new policy, which took effect this past Monday, will require transgender competitors to have completed their transition by age 12 to be able to compete in women's competitions. The working group will spend the next 6 months to determine how to set up the new open category. The spokesperson for FINA president, Hussein Al-Musallam, said, this is not saying that people are encouraged to transition by the age of 12. It's what the scientists are saying, that if you transition after the start of puberty, you have an advantage, which is unfair. They're not saying everyone should transition by age 11. That's ridiculous. You can't transition by that age in most countries, and hopefully you wouldn't be encouraged to. Basically, what they're saying is that it's not feasible for people who have transitioned to compete without having an advantage. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health lowered its recommended minimum age for starting gender transition hormone treatment to 14 and some surgeries to 15 or 17. Now, as it says, the regulations would have a major impact on the career of Willia Thomas. Thomas said, the new FINA release is deeply upsetting. It is discriminatory and will only serve to harm all women. What the hell? That's the part I had to get out. What the hell? Will only serve to harm all women? Please explain that one to me, will ya? You know, I did that mock interview a couple months ago. I'm almost tempted to have a real interview at this point. I mean, Thomas, okay. The IOC has basically urged shifting the focus from individual testosterone levels and calls for evidence to prove when a performance advantage exists. Now, Ann Lieberman of Athlete Ally, which is a nonprofit that advocates for LGBTQ+, said, it's deeply discriminatory, harmful, and unscientific. It is not unscientific. So here's some thoughts. Like I said, this has as much to do with Willia Thomas's appearance as it does any advantage or genetics. Photos of her, I'm sorry, with her obvious display of his stuff is easily as offensive, probably more so for many, than the fact that Willia Thomas is just a man masquerading with the identify as a woman. Thomas's recent comments about gunning for the Olympics, especially in the face of this controversy, had to be a turnoff for some of the governing body in FINA. I mean, it was a 71% vote. That's pretty convincing. In all honesty, the head of FINA being Muslim probably didn't help Willia Thomas's cause. Islam isn't exactly progressive when it comes to quote-unquote human rights. But let's face it, men competing against women, especially on the international stage, is not even remotely a human right. It's just not. But, yeah, I think the fact that the head of the organization being Muslim, I think it certainly plays into it to a degree. I really think the biggest factor is Willia Thomas's arrogance. Just an arrogant jack wagon, not a Jill wagon. He's a jack wagon, coupled, frankly, with the bravery of several teammates to speak up on a variety of things, which included calling out the coach and the university administration, pointing out that Thomas insisted on using the women's dressing room and locker rooms, Thomas's boasts of liking and dating women, and ultimately both displaying his junk and actively watching his teammates. No, I will not use the term them, they. Willia Thomas is a biological male. That is it. End of story. By the way, I used a lot of air quotes in that. Too many, probably. Here's another observation, or really a reflection. Back in 2019, as I mentioned before, Steve Dace appeared on this show mainly to talk about college football. But when I brought it up, he noted two things. First, as he said, it's not about equality or inclusion. It's a mental disease. I will harp on that, and I will drive that point home because he's absolutely right. But second, he pointed out that governing bodies really won't do anything unless and until other athletes and fans and the general public speak out and insist on ending this nonsense. Now, hopefully this is a good start. Oh, and the NCAA is starting to look even dumber. I know it does not seem possible for the NCAA to look dumber, but it's happening anyway. Okay, Dopey Joe did an exclusive interview on with the AP, and he said this. He said, recession is not inevitable. This guy is beyond delusional. Pumped him up with before the interview, should probably never be put into a human body ever again. Basically, he blamed the pandemic and he blamed Russia for everything, inflation, his poor ratings. But he's confident in the direction of the country, and he's confident Americans need to be confident as well. In this exclusive interview, of course, he got defensive when potential causes of inflation were brought up, including the extraordinary amount of stimulus. Now, yeah, I hang the follow-up stimulus on him. But to be fair, initially during President Trump's term, you know, there was stimulus brought out. It needed to be done at that time, mainly because we didn't know. But, I mean, it wasn't like Dopey Joe didn't set a precedent in this Congress. It was.
Okay. Now we got to know, folks. I
lost my connection and my internet connection, and it's not letting me log out to log back in. So what I'm doing is I am talking through my phone. And so we'll get back to, okay, anyway, I was on my Dopey Joe story, if you'll remember, and he is saying that the recession is not inevitable and that he didn't really have anything to do with this. It's, he's blaming Russia, blaming. The problem is, of course, as I said, the amount of stimulus, but that wasn't really him. That wasn't all him. I mean, he has expanded it. Position than anyone else. It's true inflation. It's sprung up all over the place. But the annual inflation currently that we're seeing, it's not, Japan's only 2.4%. We're over 8%, 8.6%. European countries' inflation is below or maybe up close to. The Euro area as a whole, it set a new record in May at 8.1%. That's still lower than ours. For the poor mental state of the public, which he said compared to its record low approval ratings. I get that. I'm not arguing against that necessarily. But a lot of the stuff he's kept up himself. He has been the one that started it. So, Spike White, they should use the footage as part of the January 6th sham hearings. And actually, there's a precedent for that. Years ago on The Simpsons, the show did a crossover episode with another Fox gem called The Critic. Now, The Critic was an animated show that usually followed The Simpsons on Sunday night. Actually, ironically, as I was talking about the Buzz Lightyear story, it too was a show that started on ABC. ABC abandoned it only to have Fox revive it. Anyway, this classic crossover episode, in The Simpsons' hometown of Springfield, and they never give the name of the state, they hold a film festival. Sherman, the titular character of The Critic. It was played by John Lovitz, who, despite rather unimpressive work, also has moments of brilliance. It really does. It's episode. There are a couple films that are. One is by Hans Molman, that little mole-like character, and it's called Man Getting Hit by Football. It's dumb, of course, in the context of a film festival. It's basically a guy standing in his yard, a football is thrown his way, it hits him in the nuggets, and he falls over. Nobody reacts except Homer, of course, Homer Simpson. He roars laughing. He's completely out of control. With the competition at the festival. And when Homer is the tie-breaking vote, rather than vote for burns a self-glorification flick that basically pirates clips from other films, or Barney the Drunk, he had that self-exploratory documentary called Pocahontas. Homer actually, of course, chooses Dopey Joe Wipeout, Bike Wipeout, good guy. He was trying to stop and get off his bike. He was protect him. Slide 6. To those people that are vitalizing it and memeing the thing, we need to consider turning this into an actual film, at a minimum, a good documentary short film, a film award show. I got to. Remember what he said about Trump's physical health? He said, "Look how he steps, and look how I looking like. Come on. Very steep. It had no handrail, and it was slippery, so he just did it slowly. Going up steps. And of course, it was Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Hearing he's on this bike, he stops. Put down the other, and down he goes. And I mean, it's not like he even tried to catch himself. He just fell over. Now, first of all, somebody said, we may need to outlaw bikes or the fire confidence of the guy. No medical attention is needed. No, really? Comes on. Hopefully he'll be on at 6:15 when I ask him to. But so we're going to start this movie. Now, you'll remember the movie Easy Rider. Or I hope you do. Well, this would be a version with Joe and Corn Pop and Hunter. Easy Rider begins with that scene where they're down and picking up the dope. That would be Hunter. And then the first clip, the first musical clip, is a song called The Pusher. So here we go. We have the movie. Dopey and Hunter. Putting the drugs away. Who knows where Corn Pop is? Okay, so that's the first part. That's where Dopey Joe and Hunter and maybe Corn Pop could be picking up the dope, putting it in their things. And then, of course, we'd get to the beginning part with the credits where they'd be going out on the road. Dopey Joe riding the bike. Okay, so that's the second part. Now,
I was talking about this with Vito the other day, and this is where I'm really leading to. We were laughing about this, of course. I mean, if you can't laugh at a president falling face-ass down on his bike because he can't pull his foot out of the toe clips, and he looks so stupid doing it. Well, this, if you remember the Benny Hill show, now Vito talked about somebody who said it looked like Artie Johnson on laughing, falling over on his bike. But anyway, this is how, this is the music that would finish up the movie about Dopey Joe. Here we go. Saga of Dopey Joe on his bike. I know it's everybody's going to sit there and think, why are we making such a big deal out of it? Well, there's there are several reasons. If you remember, I said earlier in the show that Dopey Joe is quickly stealing most inept president from Jimmy Carter. And, you know, a lot of people would say, oh, really? Well, yeah, he is. He is. But he's even more of a crap show than Dopey or than Carter was. But remember, Carter had the incident in 1979. He was running like a 5K fun run, and for some inexplicable reason, he like crashed and burned. He was running and he was looking sick. I mean, they showed that he was looking awful, and he didn't necessarily collapse. I mean, I guess the Secret Service got to him before he did. Now, as it turned out, he was dehydrated, severely dehydrated, and they said, Jesus, could anybody not think to give this guy a cup of water? Well, to a lesser degree, same thing here. I mean, why was he doing that? Why do you put this guy in a position to look stupid like that? That's the question I have. I mean, did anybody test him? I mean, he's riding that bike. He didn't look like he knew what the hell he was doing coming in for the landing. He looked like he was a new bike rider, per se. He didn't look like somebody who normally rode a bike in that environment. Of course, he looked stupid. But you know what? It's his own fault. I mean, let's put it this way. He's either A, supremely stupid and letting this happen, or B, they think he can pull it off. As many have said, and I agree, Jill Biden is going to have to answer to a higher power. I think what's happening is elder abuse. Nonetheless, it's easy to laugh at him, and that's why I made that. That's why I picked those songs to play for my Dopey Joe movie. I think someone's got to make the movie. Maybe wait till after he's out of the White House. But either way, it's complete and total ineptness. It's embarrassing. When it happens in other countries, you don't see Queen Elizabeth trying to ride a bike around. You know, if Putin's sick or whatever, he doesn't get out there in public and show himself. I'm not saying hide stuff from the public, but God, don't reveal the idiocy either. I mean, it's just an absolute joke. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to bring my guest on. He's on before, but that talk went in the weeds. Brother Tommy came on and wanted to talk all Formula One stuff and everything. So we're going to take – actually, you know what? We're not going to take a break. I'm going to bring him on because I forgot. I'm talking differently. So without further ado, Fred, are you there?
I am.
Excellent.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Perfect. What's happened? We lost internet, and then when I came back on, I was still connected, but I couldn't get voice. So I've dialed in on my cell phone and brought myself in as a caller, so you're in as well. So going.
Ain't technology grand?
It's. Let's put it this way. It's Spectrum Internet. If you've ever had Spectrum as your internet or phone company, that answers all the questions. So here's a couple questions that I wanted to ask. Number one, we saw Dopey Joe attacking all the oil industry executives. And, you know, and they, of course, are saying, wait a second. You know, and as I've talked about, nobody cared when ExxonMobil lost $22 billion, you know, a couple of years ago. But, you know, I know there are other factors that go into oil prices. And you know, you mentioned one time that the pandemic did lessen demand, and then we had increased demand. But, you know, coupled with cutting off our energy, you know, that's the thing. Do you think we're going to see oil prices come down at all, or in the next couple of years, or do you think we're stuck with what we have now?
Well, I think as a number of things have shown, the stock market being one of them, gravity does work. Sometimes it takes longer than we'd like, but gravity does work, and eventually, what comes up will, to an extent, come back down. Because where oil prices are, gas prices, it's not sustainable.
Right.
But again, it's funny to watch all of the supposedly serious pundits in the media, you know, talking about this factor and this factor and this factor. It's basic economics 101. It's supply and demand. And what happened was during the pandemic, demand went through the floor,
yeah,
and therefore so did oil prices. Well, when oil prices went, at one point they actually went negative for a barrel,
exactly,
of oil. So theoretically, oil producers were paying people to take their oil.
Yeah.
In reality, it didn't happen, but it was a transitory effect. But what happened was, you know, everybody took refining capacity out. Everybody, you know, a lot of the oil companies basically shut down operations during the pandemic. It's like, well, if nobody wants this oil, we're not going to pump it.
Sure.
And then, starting pretty much when the vaccines and everything became widely available, and the country started to reopen. And everybody decided, you know what, we've had enough of this lockdown crap. We're gonna get out and do stuff. Well, then the demand started rising, and it takes a lot longer for the supply to come back on stream than it did for the demand. And
sure,
so you have a supply and demand imbalance, and that's when prices go up.
Sure, and that's reasonable. But I mean, cutting then the regulation. I mean, I think you're going to see, and even some of my quote unquote liberal friends are saying, you're not going to see companies. You know, even when they say there are leases available, companies aren't going to, you know, if they perceive a negative regulatory effect, they're not going to invest a hell of a lot. They're not going to go out and you know, open up production like crazy, only to have it shut down, you know, a week later or whatever. So, I mean, you're right. I mean, I do have to give that, see that point, that it's not all Dopey Joe that has made it like this. So,
I know it's easy to blame the president and his administration's policies, and there is a component, because as you just pointed out, if you're an oil company or a refinery or whatever, are you going to spend the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade your refinery capacity, or, you know, explore new oil fields and bring new supply online, which takes a lot of time and money?
Sure.
Only to run the risk that the next administration or the next administration after that could suddenly, with literally the stroke of the president's pen, say, nope,
yeah,
we're changing the rules of the game, we're moving the goalposts, and oh, by the way, your hundreds of millions of dollars of investment is now worthless. Have fun.
Exactly.
With that.
Yeah. So let's get to the car part of it, okay? And I'll start with this, because it's a story I just saw. Since it seems to be popular, I mean, thieves broke in and stole 13 of them from a Ford truck plant in Dearborn last week. What is the deal on the Ford F-150 Raptor? I mean, it sells for $70,000 plus. Tell me a little bit about that vehicle.
Well, it's it's a beast. It is sort of the, you know, it's the maximum F-150 you can get.
Okay.
In terms of off-road performance, at least. My yep. sister actually had an F-150 Raptor for a couple of years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. She bought it, I think, at the urging of her teenage son, which may not be the best way to make a vehicle purchase decision, but I'll leave that to her.
That's her problem, not yours.
They had it for a couple of years, and as the joke went, it could pass everything except a few, except a gas station.
so it drinks gas then, obviously.
They're relatively thirsty, even though it's got the supposed EcoBoost 450 horsepower EcoBoost twin turbo V6, which is supposed to be better than the V8. But here's the thing, when you hook it up to a 5,000 pound boat and you're towing the boat, fuel economy goes in the dumper.
Yeah, exactly.
As in single digits. Well, my F-150
so, with the V8. So it's sort of like the Ford Country Squire in its heyday.
to an extent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we got 6 miles to a gallon going from Chicago to San Antonio one Christmas. 6 frigging miles to the gallon.
Wow.
So, yeah.
But I'll bet you had the big V8 engine under the hood.
Oh yeah, we have a whole damn family. I mean, me, my brother, two of the sisters, etc. So.
Yeah, that was probably rocking a 390 V8 or something.
If not the
460 from my parents' Colony Park, Mercury Colony
Park.
Yeah,
we had that. That was in my parents' Continental that they had when I was in high school, 460.
Oh, yeah.
God, those were the days. So, okay, then now, remember, Congresswoman Debbie Stabenow, last week she made the joke that she drove by the gas station because she was in her electric vehicle and she was laughing at everybody. Is she certifiably insane, or is she just an elitist, or is she just an idiot?
She's a member of Congress, so she's most of those right automatically.
Okay. So she's okay. Fair enough. But I mean, she made the comment. I mean, I don't think what people under, you know, she's talking about, I'm laughing at gas prices, but you know, real constituents out there, real citizens that you know have seen gas is, you know, and people say 50%. I mean, since the election, gas has gone up over 100%. It is more than doubled. I mean, the average price for an electric vehicle starter price is $56,000. You know, so people that, I mean, I just find that terribly insensitive on her part. And I'm just crazy. You know, I cannot believe.
Of course it is, Hank. Of course it is. Now think about it. But remember, our Secretary of Transportation, Secretary Pete,
he just came out when
people asked him about gas prices and everything, he said with a straight face, well, if gas prices are too high for poor people, they just need to go out and buy an electric vehicle.
I laugh so I don't cry, I guess, is the way I look at that. You know, and that's right. I remember he did say that, and it's just, I guess I don't understand that part of it. And that's why I want to get more into this. Here's the other thing I had a question on. I know the chip shortage. You mentioned that last time that the chip shortage is obviously having an effect. Are oil prices going to affect that anything, or is it just the chip? Do oil prices really affect production of autos, or is that pretty much just they're just going to crank them out and that, you know, gas prices aren't really a factor?
Well, GM just said that despite the rise in oil prices, they're making and selling all of the trucks and SUVs that they can. The head of GM, Mary Barra, came out and said that. Now,
okay,
the GM has also announced that they're pivoting to making all EVs sometime in the next decade. Their target, I think, is 2035.
Okay.
But, you know, don't etch that in stone.
Okay.
Because
so
because the market has a way of upending strategies like that.
Okay. So let me ask you this. This may sound like a dumb question. If you go to a car lot right now, is it possible to quote, you know, you always used to hear the quote, you know, the term sign and drive. Can you go to a car lot and still leave that car, you know, with a car that day? Or is there all this back order and delivery pending type of stuff? Or are you just limited to what they have in inventory? And, you know, you can have every car,
well,
you know, the old Henry Ford thing. You can have any car you want as long as it's black.
It's let's put it this way. There's not nearly the selection there was pre-pandemic.
Okay.
And the last number I heard, something like 82% of the new vehicles are crossing the curb, as, you know, from a dealership at or above sticker price. Now, it used to be that if you paid sticker price for a vehicle, you know, they actually stamped sucker on your forehead.
Yeah, you were in the running for dumbest consumer award, basically.
Yes. Now it's still possible to find deals out there, and it's still possible to find new vehicles on dealer lots, but you're going to find the pickings are mighty, mighty slim.
Okay. Now, what about, I always hear used cars are going so much, you know, higher. Is that still the case, or are we going to?
Used car prices, based on the people I talk to, they've started to plateau.
Okay.
I don't think they've started to come down yet, but they've started to plateau. But that's because at some point you reach the top of the arc.
Yeah.
And you know, used car prices, I've seen prices, ridiculous prices for cars where the used car is selling, it's like a 3 or 4 year old used car selling for more than it cost when it was new.
Yeah, exactly.
So in other words, you have zero depreciation or a net appreciation on a used asset. And that's just nuts.
Yeah, that makes no sense from any economic model. Other than, you know, severe shortage. So, I mean, where are we in the shortage? I mean, is there still just that much of a shortage, or is it being overblown? Are we talking it's real? I mean, I guess myself, I'm not talking to people that are saying, I can't find a car. I haven't heard it. So,
well,
is it the case, or is it just?
Here's the thing. With the chip shortage is slowly but surely working its way out, but the problem is, like a lot of other things, we don't make chips in this country, or for the most part, we don't make these silicon chips in this country. They're made in places like Taiwan or China or Malaysia or someplace else where they still have a COVID problem and they still have COVID lockdowns. I mean, China right now is struggling mightily. And of course, because it's China, you don't really get the full story or the full picture because, well, it's China. And they have a tenuous relationship with the truth.
Yeah. Well, it's not like I trust a lot from our media anymore, so, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Well, so then, but when, so what is it, I mean, okay, as an example, and then when I mentioned earlier the Raptors that got stolen, and they talked about some of them weren't even complete. They didn't have numbers yet. Some of them may not have had, you know, full, I mean, were those cars, some of them were, those cars have stopped, or were they stealing them for parts, do you think? Odds are
they were stealing them for parts. They just had a bunch of Camaros, you know, fancy Camaros get stolen from a GM plant in Michigan or wherever they're built. And basically it was a bunch of thieves who decided to go on joyrides with these things.
Okay.
So a couple of them got written off. A couple of them wound up, you know, sort of in the ditch or something.
Right.
A couple of them, I think they ran it out of gas, or they broke something on the car and just left them by the side of the road. I think they caught some of the perpetrators, but normally, auto companies have a lot better security than that.
Yeah, I would.
I'm surprised.
Never know. Yeah, I mean, in the Ford case, talk about driving right, you know, right, getting past security, so to speak. I don't know.
Well,
you know,
If they're going to get past security like that, sometimes they've got a little help from the inside.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it must sound kind of like, you know, it couldn't have been that easy. So then it's sort of like, okay, remember when there was, I don't remember exactly, late 90s, early 2000s, remember when cars were being stolen for the...
Okay. Run that by me again, you're sort of breaking up on me a little.
Remember there was a period like in the late 90s and early 2000s when cars were being stolen for their airbags, for certain types of airbags?
I do remember that, you know, like every other part on a vehicle, some things have value. Sometimes they used to steal cars for the car stereos. They used to steal certain cars because the seats were really good and they were in high demand on the aftermarket, like certain Porsches with Recaro seats.
Okay.
I had a Honda Prelude, and the seats in that car, you know, they were real popular with a lot of the import tuners, and
okay.
So those cars would get stolen, and the interior would get, you know, the seats would get ripped out, and then, you know, the shell of the car would be left by the side of the road. They steal tailgates on full size pickups, which, you know, is kind of amazing, just because it's really a pretty simple mechanism.
Okay.
But if there's a demand in the aftermarket, in the underground aftermarket, people will steal stuff. Now it's catalytic converters.
Yeah,
now
I remember that as well.
They're jacking up Priuses and stealing catalytic converters. One of our neighbors up the street was at a trampoline park the other day and got the catalytic converter stolen off of their Honda Element. That's not a real rare car.
Yeah. You mentioned Priuses. Priuses have a catalytic converter in them?
Oh, yeah. Every car with a gas engine has a catalytic converter.
But that's a hybrid, but I guess that's still – That makes sense, because it's got the gas element
and
of it.
And basically, the catalytic converter takes the bad gases in the exhaust and essentially turns them into water and carbon dioxide.
Okay. Now you're still driving, as evidenced by your social media posts. I mean, you're still driving a lot.
My many posts on social media.
Yeah. You're going cross country, or, you know, as they say, over the rivers and through the woods and over mountains and stuff and water. But other than that, have you, other than those trips that you sort of quote unquote have to take, have you altered your drive, how much you drive with the oil prices? I mean, you have an F-150. Do you have a second car that you're driving more in town, so to speak? Or do you just kind of think you and maybe other Americans are just saying, hey, driving's a necessity?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, yes, I have other vehicles. The F-150 is not our daily driver.
Okay.
Because that would get really, really expensive. My personal record on filling up the 36-gallon tank in the F-150 is $165 for one fill-up.
So, in Florida, in some gas stations, it's still not $100. It won't let you fill any
more than that. I've run into the $100 limit. Most of them have changed that to either $125 or $150.
Okay.
And I've bumped up against those limits too.
Okay. So 36 kilo tank, 165. So that's not even. That's I guess that's average. I mean, that's about what. Okay. So I'm thinking that was only like $3. No, that's wrong. That's like five plus. So okay.
Yeah, that was five and change, and that was in April in Northern California.
Okay.
But it, you know, it's one of those things where it is what it is. Now, our truck actually gets better than 20 miles to the gallon, even with the V8.
On the highway.
The only time it gets less than 20 miles to the gallon is when we're hauling the boat.
Okay. So it does well for a V8 too. That's really, you know.
Yeah, considering I grew up with full size station wagons where you were lucky to get into the low double digits.
Yeah.
And I'm getting double that.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I'm really happy at this point. I'm thrilled. Now you can get trucks that get better fuel economy if you get one of the new inline diesels or something like that. But
if it had gotten into the diesel stuff with it,
but
as far as that goes.
The problem is diesel here in California is up over $7.
Yeah. So that's just brutal.
That's painful.
It's but it's there. I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy. What, now, for a while, I remember, and maybe this is longer ago than I'm thinking, but it seemed to me for a while that diesel was cheaper than regular gas. Or is that my
At one point it used to be, but one of the things that the politicians did because they wanted to discourage people from buying diesels is they raised the taxes on diesel fuel. For instance, the federal tax on diesel fuel is 26 or something cents per gallon.
Okay.
The federal gas tax on a gallon, and this is what Joe was talking about. He wants Congress to suspend the gas tax for 3 months. I'm surprised it was only for 3 months. I thought he was going to say suspend it for 5 months or, translation, until the midterm elections.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was expecting.
I mean,
that's only 18 cents. That's only 18 cents, and as somebody –
Right.
As somebody pointed out, on a 10-gallon tank, that's $1.80. On a 15-gallon tank, it's what, $2.10, something like that. I mean, that's nothing.
Something like that.
You know, that's nothing when you think about it. And you remember, I did this during Obama years, and it's the way they think. Remember, under Obama, they suspended the payroll tax. You know, the Social Security tax, not the payroll tax, not the tax, but the Social Security.
Right.
But they only did it for employees. They didn't do it on employers. So, in a sense, employers were matching, instead of matching 6.2%, they were match plus on 4.2% and adding on 2%. And it's, you know, what people don't realize, I mean, people thought it was great. People, we're paying less. What they didn't realize is, guess what? Your Social Security payment's going to go down now. If you're, you know, the average person that's waiting for Social Security to kick in and survive on that, it didn't do anything for me. It left a little more in your pocket, but in the long run, it did not. It did nothing, you know. And that's the same thing with a gas tax. I mean, it's just it's going to lower the pocket impact minimally, not as much as they say. It's then going to not go into the federal highway fund. And, you know, having been on a mission trip in a third world country, I can tell you, highway fund comes in pretty damn handy when you need road repairs. You know, I mean, it's.
Well, yeah, if Congress was actually using the highway fund for just funding the highway.
Yeah, true.
But
true.
Congress has sort of dipped into the highway trust fund from time to time to help balance the budget. And
sure.
It's all wonderfully designed.
Sort of when they dipped into Social Security and trust funds and Medicare trust funds and every other trust fund. I mean, that's their
right.
That's like their MO. So
basically, Congress sees a pile of money and it doesn't matter if it's in a trust fund or what Al Gore used to call a lockbox. Remember the lockbox?
We're
going to put this money in a lockbox.
It's never
because when Congress wants money, Congress basically figures out, okay, we're going to rob Peter to pay Paul, and Paul's going to be just thrilled with that arrangement.
Yeah,
and nobody
exactly ever
asked Peter what he thinks.
Yeah, so let's get to this. In areas with good public transportation, now, some areas have a lot better than others. I mean, some of the real major cities, Chicago, my last trip to Chicago, we didn't have a car. We didn't need a car. I don't even think we needed it. We only used Uber once while we were there because Chicago, between their buses, their trains, et cetera, they have great public transportation. You know, for a visitor, I don't know for people that live there. Certain areas of California, Miami actually has pretty decent public transportation. Seattle has good public transportation. I mean, in the long run, do you think that's the answer? Whether it be short term or long term. I'm a driver like you are. I'm not as much of a driver as you are, but I mean, do you think we're going to have to get to, in a sense, to lessen strain on automakers and on
we're going to wind up with a couple of likely scenarios. As you said, there are some cities that have really good public transportation systems, except for one thing. Like every other piece of infrastructure in this country, we've spent the last 40 or 50 years underinvesting in it.
Yeah.
And so if you go on public transportation in major cities, half the time it's either broken or filthy or possibly crime-ridden. And that's not how you're going to get a lot of good people, a lot of average consumers to switch. The other thing is, public transportation is good if you need to go where it goes. But if you need to go someplace that it doesn't go, then it doesn't work at all for you. And that's what they've discovered here in Los Angeles. You know, Los Angeles, they've been spending billions to build out their public transportation system. The problem is a lot of people simply won't use it because when you look at the map, you suddenly go, okay, if I want to go from Long Beach to downtown LA, I've got to allow 3 hours for what is a 45-minute drive. And that's not a workable solution. I think what you're going to find in places, and it's going to start in places like Las Vegas and maybe New York, you're going to wind up with smaller autonomous vehicles that do 20, 25, 30 miles an hour, which is what the police and the traffic planners in those cities want anyway, because it reduces fatalities from vehicle pedestrian bike interactions.
Okay.
You want people moving around, but you want people moving around slowly. So you're going to have these sort of EV autonomous pods roaming around, and you can, with your phone, smartphone, you can say, okay, I want to go from this address to this address, and you can summon the vehicle, and it'll debit your account, and you'll go pretty much exactly or within a block of where you want to be. And then somebody else will get into the vehicle you just exited, and they'll go to a different location. And within a geofenced area, that's what I think you're going to have. Because the other thing we discovered with mass transit, whether it's trains, subways, buses, et cetera, is the pandemic suddenly made those rolling germ factories. And
you
can't pay people enough to sterilize them quickly enough to keep them clean. And besides, a bus rolling around, you know, a 40 or 50 passenger bus rolling around with six passengers is really, really inefficient.
Yeah, it is. Sure.
Especially when you when you're paying a union driver to drive it.
True.
What now?
Hold off on time, because I do want to get that again. Here's something I didn't think. I don't think we covered enough that time. Okay, forgetting internal combustion engines. Okay, so let's look for a second. What are the different types of electric vehicles? I mean, you've got two different types of electric. You've got hybrid. So start with hybrid. Basically, how does a hybrid engine work?
Well, basically, a hybrid is nothing more than a regular car with an electric motor and a battery of some size that can power the vehicle instead of turning on the gas engine.
Okay. So it has a engine, because you mentioned the catalytic converter for a Prius. So it has a regular gas engine?
It has a regular gas engine, and the gas engine will power the vehicle. Let's say you're going from city to city.
Okay
you're going to, you know, I'm going to go, you're going to go from Orlando to Jacksonville. So, you know, you might have a hybrid, and running, if it's plug-in hybrid, where it's got like 30 to 60 miles pure electric range, when you're driving around Orlando, you can do most of your driving around Orlando using just electric, and the gas engine never turns on. But you want to go down to Miami, you want to go up to Jacksonville, you get out on the turnpike, okay, now you're using the gas engine because you've used up the electrical, you know, the EV, and you use the gas engine to go between cities, and then by then you've charged enough back in the battery that you can use electric driving around to your destination.
Okay. And so,
and
what
then you
charges,
use the gas engine
what,
coming
what
back.
What is charging?
Run that by me again. You broke up again.
Charges the electric part. Is it use the gas engine?
Well, the part that's the electric is the electric motor is tied into the, it's basically between the engine and the transmission. And so if the motor controller decides that it can get by using just electric power, it'll do that. Also,
okay.
it'll use the electric engine, because electric motors are, they basically make maximum torque just after zero RPM. So when you first dip into it, that's why EVs are just lightning fast.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, you did sort of mention it before. Okay.
Yeah, it's because it's lots of torque right off the line, and that's where gas engines are at their least efficient. Gas engines like cruising, which is why my F-150 gets really good fuel economy on the highway, but from stoplight to stoplight, it sucks.
Okay. Now I'm sort of starting to understand it. Okay. So the hybrid, you say a plug-in hybrid. Is a Prius a plug-in hybrid or not?
Well, a Prius offers both a regular hybrid and a plug-in hybrid. The thing about plug-in hybrids basically means that you can plug them in and recharge the battery at home or at a charging station, and that gives you more juice. They have a bigger battery. Now, bigger battery weighs more, but they can go further on an electric charge before they have to turn on the gas engine.
Since it's a matter of personal taste, when our daughter's living in Seattle, first of all, it sounded weird because we couldn't hear it going anywhere. We weren't even sure that it was on.
Yeah. Basically, You get in, you push the button that turns on, but you don't hear the engine start.
Yeah.
But then it's ready to drive, and you start driving, and once you've depleted enough of the battery that the engine, that the controller decides it has to turn the engine on, then you'll feel the engine start.
Okay. Now, how big is the gas? How big is the gas tank in a device? Is it?
Typically they're about 10 to 12 gallons. So it's not, you know, it's not a little tiny tank, but it may take several months to burn through a tank of gas in a hybrid. I've heard of people, in fact, I just got a ride in a Prius Prime up in Monterey. And the guy was talking about how he hadn't bought gas in months. So
okay,
as far as he was concerned, he was still burning relatively cheap $5 a gallon gas. Instead
so,
of $6 a gallon gas.
Regular hybrid versus plug-in hybrid is going to do longer on.
The big difference is just the size of the battery and the fact that there's a charging port.
Okay.
Typically, a regular hybrid like the early Priuses, they didn't have a charging port. So the only time the battery would charge was when the engine was running and you were coasting downhill or something, or coasting to a stoplight. Then it would take the excess energy that you know, just sort of bleed away on the brakes, and it would take that energy and put it back into the battery. You know, I admire the engineering that goes into hybrid systems, because it's really fairly sophisticated engineering. As I said to the guy, I don't have a problem with the Prius as a mechanical device. The problem I have with Priuses are the idiots behind the wheel who think that they have a God-given right to the left lane here in California.
All plug-in, or is there fast? Are there some that charge faster, that kind of thing, or no? Are we basically talking a thing that's got a midnight and that's it?
Well, a plug-in has, if I understand your question correctly,
I'm not talking hybrid. Now I'm talking just the EVs, just the electric. Is there one
just pure
type?
EVs.
Okay, yeah. So was there just one type, or are there different levels of EV?
Well, it used to be that the first EVs, you know, something like a Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
Or something like that. Those were what were called compliance vehicles, and those were built primarily to meet the zero emission requirements here in the state of California and in some other states. So that's why they weren't sold in all 50 states. They were only sold in California and another six or eight states up in the Northeast and stuff, where they said, oh, well, we think pollution is a problem. We like California's solution, so we're going to copy California's rules. And, companies, and, you know, when I worked at Kia, our first EV, the Kia Soul EV, was primarily a compliance vehicle. And that was just to meet the letter of the law to get zero emissions credits and to say, yeah, we can build an EV. But the EV had a range of about 100 and 120 miles before it ran out of charge.
Okay.
And
sucks.
You'd charge at a level 2 charger, which is 240 volts, sort of whatever your dryer at home runs on. And it would take 4 hours to fully recharge. So when I was driving one, I'd get to work in the morning, I'd plug in, I'd unplug it to go to lunch. I'd come back, plug it back in, and when I left at the end of the day, I'd have a full charge. But it wasn't something a bunch of us did a road trip down to San Diego and back, which is theoretically 90 miles, but we went inland and we went through some mountain roads and everything. And
sure.
we had to stop several times on our route. And that's, so that wasn't really workable as far as, going cross country, like you and I think about going cross country, which is you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
When you're out in the middle of West Texas, there's no charging station out there. And you can't call up AAA for a bucket of electrons to pour in. If you got to call AAA, they got to send a flatbed.
Okay. So talk about some of the vehicles you've sampled recently. You said you've been out driving recently. Give me a couple ones you've tested. Really awesome. Electrical.
The highlight of the cars I've driven in the last month. The big highlight is I got to drive an F-150 Lightning.
It's a
full EV pickup truck.
Okay.
It's a full size pickup truck. It's a crew cab. The prices start just over $40,000 and top out over $95,000, depending on trim level, but. With the big battery, you've got up to 320 miles of range, which is not bad.
And how long to charge?
They can recharge from, I think it's from about 20% to 80% in about 45 minutes on a DC fast charger.
Now,
which,
if you're driving along, do you have to find a place with a DC fast charger, or is it something that you can
And you've hit on the big problem right now, and that's why in the infrastructure bill from last year, there was a provision to spend, I think it's $5 or $7 billion, building out charging infrastructure. Along the interstate highway system.
Okay.
So what you'll see is you'll probably see EV chargers popping up at some of these bigger truck stops.
Okay.
So whether it's Flying J or Love's or something like that, you're going to have people pull in there, and they'll go eat at the Black Bear Diner or whatever the heck they've got there, and you'll have a meal. You'll spend 45 minutes while your EV, your long range EV is charging. Or Tesla right now has the best network of chargers, their supercharger system, and those are really pretty good. And they have some DC fast chargers, but there needs to be a lot more of them before EVs get widely adopted.
Right.
But
are we ever going to have a point in EVs where you pull up? I mean, like now, you can go into a Starbucks and there's 27 different places to charge your damn phone or your laptop. Are we ever going to get to that point with electric vehicles?
Not for a while. The thing with eventually, and what I'd like to see is, right now we give oil companies, the federal government gives oil companies subsidies, billions and billions of dollars in subsidies for oil and gas exploration, et cetera. Eventually, I'd like to see that money diverted into building out EV, an EV charging infrastructure working with the oil companies so that you pull into a fueling station. I wouldn't call it a gas station anymore. Call it a fueling station, and you'll have a bank. You'll have a bank of EV chargers, and you'll still have gas pumps, and you'll still have diesel pumps, but eventually,
you have more allocation.
Right. You'll get a greater and greater allocation of each EV charging station. The other thing is, right now, if you look at most of the EV charging stations, you have to pull into them, either pull in straight or you back in.
Right.
Well, if you're towing a trailer, and these EV pickups, they're set up to tow, whether it's Ford F-150, whether it's Rivian or whatever, they're set up to tow. So you're going to need at least a couple of these chargers at charging stations to be something where you can pull straight through if you've got a trailer on the back.
Because, by the way, there's nothing that annoys me more than pulling into Sam's Club to get gas, and the person that pulls in with the trailer and takes up both spots. I mean, I don't know if you have this at Costco, because I remember you said you used Costco. Sam's Club, for some reason, they're only like 10 cents a gallon cheaper, but they're constantly having these huge lines now. And just to see that just makes me just hurl to see all these double, trailers and stuff. But that's just a personal thing. That's.
Well, so, no, I will confess that when we've towed our boat across country, I've been that guy.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. They got to figure out a way. And if they can't figure it out with gas, I'm not sure how they're going to figure it out with electric. So, here's a couple questions that came from the chat room. There was a massive fire breaks out at an EV park in Delhi, India, Mahindra, hundreds of vehicles gutted. So where's the safety factor now, at least in the U.S., or is it just a matter? And now somebody else has buses in Paris that caught fire. So, is there still a safety factor that we haven't crossed yet?
That's a tough question because here's the thing. Car fires are so ubiquitous that nobody takes notice of them anymore.
Right, because it's not school shooting or whatever.
Right. My wife and I do a lot of driving on Interstate 5. You go up over the Grapevine, and there, every mile or so, every couple of miles, there's a big black charred spot on the side of the road.
From a car fire.
That's from a car fire.
Okay.
Sometimes they have, here in California, you get a car fire on a mountain road, all of a sudden you got a wildfire. And it burns hundreds of acres.
Yeah, in California, it's really not good.
No. But EVs... Typically, an EV doesn't catch fire unless something happens to the battery, like in an accident. And it's been a problem for Teslas especially.
Okay.
Because Tesla's battery chemistry is such, and battery chemistry in general, energy is energy. And an uncontained release of energy, which is fancy speak for a fire. In an EV battery is a really bad thing because they've had Tesla car fires where the battery catches on fire, fire department comes out, puts it out. They take the vehicle to the wrecking yard where the battery catches fire again in the wrecking yard.
Oh God.
And they've had Teslas catch fire 3 and 4 times. So the fire departments are developing new protocols. And I just read that one of the protocols is if they've got a Tesla that caught fire, they've got a special pit filled with water, and they just shove the car in the pit full of water.
Wow.
And they leave it there for several days or a week. And then they pull it out, and they figure, okay, now it's, now it's completely out. I haven't heard of that. But, you know, because the one thing about a car fire, once you put it out, it generally stays out.
Mm-hmm. But
with a battery fire, you put it out, it doesn't necessarily stay out.
Yeah, that's problematic. Now, here's another question that came in. What about the electric grid? I mean, there's a joke. I've seen this joke on Twitter, but it bears. This one was not the meme, but it was basically. Here's what it says. It says, given that we've been told there's going to be rolling blackouts and energy problems this summer, doesn't exactly seem like the perfect time to test the idea of plugging 25 million vehicles into the grid each night. Is our electric grid able to handle that?
Well, first of all, the problem with that meme is you're not going to be plugging 25 million vehicles in at night. Not any time in this half of the century.
So it's not going to happen overnight, obviously.
It's not going to happen overnight. But that is a concern. That is something that's keeping people in the EV community awake at night because, let's look at some of the wildfires that they've had here in California. A couple of years ago, they had a wildfire up in Northern California. People who had Teslas suddenly couldn't plug in and recharge their Tesla at home. And they've had rolling blackouts and everything. If you can't recharge your EV, then you have a really, a really pretty lawn ornament.
Really, a very expensive lawn ornament as well.
And a very expensive lawn ornament.
What's going to happen with batteries? I mean, are we going to have batteries? First of all, I understand it can cost thousands of dollars to replace the battery in an EV. I'm not even sure why we're hearing that now because I'm not sure why, unless they've been around, unless their vehicles have been around a longer time. But I mean, what's the typical battery cost if you have to replace it? It's like, is it not like thousands of dollars?
It's on the order of $8,000 to $10,000, but you're right. There haven't been that many batteries that had to be replaced yet.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what's the warranty on these cars?
EVs,
that kind of thing.
EVs have been around since 2010. That's when the Nissan Leaf came out. That was the first practical mass market EV. The Teslas have been around since 2012. The short answer is right now, nobody really knows. Just like nobody really knows whether we're going to be able to recycle.
Right. That was another question that came in. What's the solution of that? So,
well, there's a company in Northern California started by a former Tesla guy called Redwood something or other, and they're looking at EV battery recycling and, either reusing the materials or the other thing that I've seen is like Nissan Leaf batteries.
Mm-hmm.
When they're no longer able to power the vehicle, they're still useful as storage batteries. And so they wind up being one of these household storage batteries where the power goes out and you've got power for a couple of days. Thanks to your wall-mounted storage battery, kind of like a Tesla power.
You mean
power
almost like a power inverter or a generator, but it's just a battery that does it.
Yeah, it's a battery that does it. Here's a fun fact: the Ford F-150 Lightning, in the event of a power outage, if you get the right equipment from Ford, can be used to power your house in the event of a power outage for 3 days.
And that actually doesn't sound all that odd in this sense. you know, with a power inverter, you know, and it's not your whole house, but I mean, with a power inverter hooked up to your car battery, you can power, you know, depending on the size of the inverter. But I mean, I have like a 2000 watt inverter that I use during hurricane times to power up, you know, a PC and power up, you know, TV, power up fan, you know, and do that kind of stuff. So no, that part doesn't surprise me. In fact, when I was thinking at my office of using partial inverters for some of our backup power, one of the things the guy said was, well, don't use golf cart batteries. Those are the best model for doing it. So, I mean, that doesn't shock me in that regard, because as he said, it's sometimes these batteries aren't useful anymore as automobile or whatever, but they still generate power. They just don't generate the power to run a vehicle. So that doesn't surprise me in a sense, but it's still.
No,
it's still interesting.
It's one of those nice, clever solutions. You go, okay, that's a good way to get some more useful life out of the technology.
Exactly.
You know, another good thing is one of those Tesla Powerwalls. You know, having a backup battery. You know, we've got solar on our house out here because sun always shines.
Exactly.
So we've looked at. Adding a household battery so that if the power does go out, we don't lose everything in the freezers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or we can still run the AC or whatever.
I mean, that's something I became an expert at, running a 24-hour call center. I can give you 20 solutions as to how to keep power up. I mean, you know, there's all this, and again, this answers some of the stuff about cars too. I mean, if it's a short-term thing, you know, you know, your car's going to be out for a day. Well, there's all kinds of solutions to that. It's what do you do if the whole electric grid fails for electric cars or whatever? But in terms of, like, you know, people say, I've got to keep this up and that up. Number one, in a disaster situation, you don't really need to be able to watch Seinfeld reruns. You know, you need to be able to keep, you know, freezers running and that kind of thing. But even then, you don't have to have those.
You got
to
be able to
keep those power 24 hours.
Right. You keep the freezer running. If you've got, older relatives, you got to keep their medical devices running,
exactly.
Whatever.
And medications or whatever.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be running 24 hours. It doesn't need to be running 24/7. But I
exactly.
guess when people freak out about, oh, I'm going to lose the, you know, my beer's getting warm. Well, you know what? You run your generator and power your refrigerator for 2 hours a day, and you are going to, believe it or not, you're going to be fine. You know, so there's that issue. So that part of it makes sense. But I hadn't thought about the fact that they could use those batteries then as a power source. That part of it is a practical thing at least. So.
Yes.
So. I mean, the batteries will eventually die. You'll need to do, you know. Oh, are they recyclable? That's the other question, because they're lithium. Are they lithium batteries?
Most of them are lithium ion batteries, and they're working on making them recyclable.
Okay.
But
okay, cool.
To my knowledge, I haven't heard of anything that's really, you know, where they've done it too much yet.
Okay. Here's a question, because we're going to have to get going shortly, because we only got 10 minutes, and I got to finish up some stuff. I do want you to come back again next month so we can talk more of this stuff, though, because I mean, this fascinates me. So, but here's a story that I saw today. Our former previous president, Joe Biden's previous boss, and our current shadow president, as I call him, I still think I always say this is Barack's third term. But you know, he's a climate warrior. He hates fossil fuels and all that stuff. Did you hear he's applied for a permit to install 3 propane tanks at his Martha's Vineyard property, totaling 2,500 gallons? Is this height of hypocrisy?
I did hear about
this. Go ahead.
Well, it would appear to be the height of hypocrisy if you're using propane tanks. Depending on what you're using them for, if you're using them to cook, Well, that's a whole lot of food that you're cooking.
A typical residential propane tank in that area holds 100 to 500 gallons. That's what the person that the company, the agency that issues the permits, they said a typical is 100 to 500. This is what scares me, because here's what he said one time. I'm a firm believer that climate change is real and that it is impacted by human behavior and carbon emissions. As a consequence, I think we have an obligation to future generations to do something. So 2,500 gallons of propane tank and just doesn't sound, but this is what scares me. Is there something else going on? You know what I mean? Is that get that thought?
Well,
do I need to take up the tinfoil hat?
Let's put it this way: if this gentleman, who shall remain nameless, if he's really concerned about climate change and the attendant sea level rise, then why the F did he buy beachfront property in Martha's Vineyard?
Correct. That's the first question.
That would be the first question to go, excuse me, shouldn't you really be on a hill somewhere?
Exactly. It just kind of scares me. What does he know?
But again,
I could be way overthinking it, obviously. But
remember, the pronouncements were that the planet was going to be dead by. Fill in the blank. 2007, 2012, 2020.
Yeah,
we're still here.
Yeah, we are still here.
So all of the doom and gloom was just that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was a lot of fear mongering going on.
Yep. Well, you know, like for instance, they talk right now about quote unquote water shortages in California. I remember we're first meeting back up in Wisconsin years and years ago. I remember you guys talking about water restriction back then. That was what, the 1970s and 80s. So they're making it sound like suddenly we've got these water – bullshit. You guys have lived under water restriction since I've known you. I mean, literally.
Here's the thing. California is and has always been, since the dawn of time, a semi-desert. It's not the Mojave, but, and rainfall goes in these big cycles. And right now we're in a drought cycle. In the mid-70s, we were in a drought cycle, and we had water restrictions, and we were putting bricks in our toilet tanks and all this other silly nonsense to save water.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Here's the dirty little secret. The people of the state of California have been presented with water bonds to the tune of $11 billion in water bonds, and they voted to approve every single water bond that they've ever been faced with in the state of California, because the people of California realized, hey, we do live in a semi-desert, or if not full-on desert, we need water. And what have the politicians done with those $11 billion of authorized water bonds?
Financed more water restrictions.
Well, no. What they haven't done is they haven't built a new dam in California in this century. In fact, I think they haven't built a new dam since sometime in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
They've done everything except build water storage. They've got all this money to run ads telling everybody to conserve water. But what they don't do is they don't build more water storage.
That's the thing, and that was the other question I have. You know, we always hear about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and we're hearing how many billions of millions or billions of barrels we have. Why have they not thought about doing that with water ever? It seems like they haven't. I mean, in Florida, where we had hurricanes for several summers in a row, and again, it's not every year, and it's not intensified or whatever, like they say. But I mean, we had several years in a row of hurricane activity, and we were 17 inches over or 22 inches over. Literally, the next year where we had like one or two hurricanes, it was like fear-mongering. I mean, it's, we're so far below. We were like 12 inches below for the year. And they make it sound like we just came through this frigging 40 years in the desert kind of stuff. I mean, it is, you know, I mean, resource management at the government level is not, it's not their strong suit, that's for sure.
No, it's not, because let's put it this way. There's parts of the country. Look at what's going on up in Yellowstone. You don't think that you could find a way to capture some of that excess runoff?
Yeah, exactly.
And use solar or wind power to pump it to the top of the Continental Divide, and then let gravity take over. Where's it going to run? It's going to run to the Colorado River. It's going to run to the rivers in the west, and guess what? All of a sudden, you've got more water in the state of California.
Yep.
If there's excess water in the Midwest, find a way to get it to the top of the Continental Divide in New Mexico and Arizona.
Every year in the Midwest, we hear about snow runoff. Yeah.
And you don't have to pump it all the way to California. You just have to pump it to the top of the Continental Divide, and gravity takes over and says, thank you very much. I'll get this west.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take it from here.
They could figure it out, but they won't. So anyway, hey, I got to run. We're up against the thing, so I got to close it out. But I'm gonna hold you to coming back on next month, and we'll talk more of this stuff. In the meantime, I'm going to play your song as we exit out of here. So, hey, folks, thanks for being here. I want to thank Boye and Duck and Alaskan for being in the chat room and having some really good questions. Sue from New Mexico who called in, and Mike as well, Hawkeye Mike. But also thank you very much to Fred, otherwise known as Gearhead Fred, because he's got the gears working all the time. So have a good one, Fred, and we will talk next month.
No, thank you very much, Hank.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that's it for tonight. We're going to play out Fred's song to let him out of here, because he can't drive 55. He really can't. But, folks, y'all have a good rest of the week. Have a good weekend. And don't forget the other shows on Global Patriot Radio every night. We'll talk to y'all later, and I'll send you out with a little Can't Drive 55.
Bye-bye.